on Power Talk AM 1460 and FM 101.1. Streaming worldwide on iHeartRadio. Jan Price talks to the movers and shakers in the film business. The Jan Price Show.
You're listening to The Jan Price Show, and today my guest is Michael Waltrip, and he is a two-time Daytona 500 champion. Welcome to the show, Michael.
Thank you for having me on. How's it going?
It's going great. It's going great. How's it going for you?
I'm having a great day. It's just a beautiful day in North Carolina, enjoying life and appreciating every day of it.
Great. That's what we can do, right? We just enjoy what we have. Each moment that we have is a precious gift. We're going to talk today. I'm so excited to talk about your new documentary, A Blink of an Eye. And I want to find out how this documentary came about to begin with, Michael.
Well, back in 2011, I wrote a book that chronicled the events that led up to the 2001 Daytona 500, where I won my first race ever, and my friend, my mentor, my car owner, Dale Earnhardt, was tragically killed on the last lap of that race.
Yes.
And so what I thought was the best day of my life turned out to be one of the most difficult days of my life. And in 2011, I wrote the book, and it did really good. People liked it. And part of the process of making the documentary, I do some appearances and work with Monster Energy. They're the big sponsor in NASCAR. And one of the marketing guys at Monster read my book. His name's Mitch Covington, and Mitch is the main marketing dude. And he loved the book so much, he said, "You got to give the speech. You got to give a speech about your book to our sales force. It's very inspirational. It's motivational. It's about perseverance. And I want you to tell our sales force, you know, what you went, how you persevered." And so I gave about a 30-minute speech. And when I got done, there were big, tattooed, hairy guys that came up to me and said, "Man, you made me cry. That's a good story." And that at that point, Mitch thought that it would be really cool to make that speech, make our book into a documentary. So Monster Energy and me and Mitch and Paul Taublieb of Taublieb Films got together and started the process. It took about 6 or 8 months, but everybody that was a player, a key part of that day in Daytona in 2001, participated. And I'm going to tell you, Jan, it's exactly what I hoped it would be. It's a great story. It brings the book to life. And I know that there's a lot of people that have told me, I get this a lot. They're like, "I don't read many books, but I read yours in one day. It's such an easy read. And I enjoyed it so much." And so now the movie, I think people are going to enjoy it equally as much.
I agree. I totally agree. And you brought up the word perseverance, which is one of the questions I had for you. For people who do not know, you had 462 losses in a row, and yet you continued to persevere and you didn't quit. So tell us a little bit about why you continue to persevere. I mean, that's a huge amount of losses. Definitely.
Well, the fact of that number is interesting. Nobody in the history of NASCAR has ever lost that many races and then won one. Now, there's been people that have lost that many races and never won one, but nobody had ever lost that many races and then finally won one. And what I love about that number and about our story is where Dale Earnhardt had me mentally February of 2001. I signed on to drive for him in September. We were preparing for the 2001 season throughout the winter. And when I woke up on February 18th, 2001, with 462 losses in a row under my belt, I woke up and I told my family, my friends, I said, "They ain't beating me today. It ain't happening. I'm going to win this race today." And that was because of his faith and his belief in me and what I could do behind the wheel of one of his cars. And I think that's just such a tribute to Dale Earnhardt that he was that inspirational and that motivational And I could not wait to crank my engine that day and go out and do what he hired me to do. And crazy enough, the first race ever driving for Dale in his car, I took the checkered flag in the Daytona 500. Tragically, he was killed some 100 yards from the start-finish line on what looked to be a perfect day.
You know, that it is sort of amazing because I think everybody who saw the crash just thought he was going to walk away from it. I mean, there's been worse crashes that have taken place and worse crashes that he's probably had been in. So I think that was the shock. I mean, I remember that day too and hearing about it. And obviously the whole country was in mourning because even if you didn't follow racing, you knew Dale Earnhardt. You knew who he was and what he brought to racing. So to go back to, you know, it's so important to have somebody who believes in you. And that helps us a lot, no matter what we're doing in life. If there's that cheerleader that says, you know, I know you can do this. I'm behind you. I believe in you. That can really change the trajectory of someone's life. And obviously it did for you. But how did you, even with that, with having him believe in you and be there for you, how did you mentally prepare for that day?
Well, I had a moment that Sunday morning that was key to me winning that race. Now, think about this. I was in the best car I'd ever been in my career. I knew that. I had a car capable of winning the Daytona 500. I knew that. But then I also knew that a guy that had been racing for 15 years and hadn't been to Victory Lane in a big race, I knew that that guy with this car could go out early and make a mistake. He could be overzealous in his strategy and his plan. And I remember taking a moment to myself amidst all the chaos that is Daytona and all drama and the buildup to the green flag and the Great American Race. I stepped out in front of the hauler that transports the race cars. I stepped out in front of the hauler. I was all by myself. And I just thought, what an opportunity this is. Don't screw it up. Make sure you're totally focused. Understand it's 500 miles. You're not going to win it early, or you could only lose it early. And that conversation that I had in my mind about the day, I think was key to me being around at the end. I just couldn't make a mistake early because I was so amped up about this opportunity. And we were able to miss all accidents and the craziness early in the race and be around at the end. You have to understand, I'd never won a NASCAR Cup race, but I'd beaten everybody in the race before. I mean, I didn't finish first, but I'd beat all of them at one time or another. So I didn't lack for confidence so much. I believed in myself, and I don't think I could have woke up that morning and fabricated a story in my brain that would allow me to tell anybody that asked, they ain't beating me today. It was because I was ready and Dale had put me in a position mentally that I went and did the job.
And how beautiful is that, you know, to have, again, you know, to have that, have somebody who believes in you in that way. So tell me about the moment you won. You won the race. Dale was what? His son was behind you, Dale Earnhardt Jr., and then Dale was behind his son. And he was kind of protecting all of you, wasn't it? He was helping you and pushing you. That's what I gathered. Is that true, that he was sort of there to guide you all and make sure that you all were in the lead? Because you were all – it was a team effort.
Yeah. Well, what happened was in – October of 2000, in a race in Talladega, Alabama, Dale went to Victory Lane. He won the race. And the rules for the 2001 Daytona 500 were the same as they were in Talladega. And that meant a lot of drafting, a lot of pushing, and a lot needing a teammate or a drafting partner that you could count on. And we raced that. And yeah, it's funny because Dale told me, he said, me, you, Dale Jr., we're together, we're going to win this race. We're going to push. We're going to shove. Whoever gets in front first, the other two line up and push.
Okay.
Just draft. And that's the only way to get to victory lane. And I remember thinking, you know, there's 40 other cars out there. There's just three of us. I mean, that's almost crazy to think the three of us are going to be able to figure out how to be ahead of the other 40. And you know, I'm like, whatever you say, boss, I'm hearing you. And I'm in. I'll do whatever you say. And so there was a big crash with about 20, 30 laps to go. And when there was a red flag because Tony Stewart flipped down the back, probably 20 cars in this big crash. And when we stopped on the front straightaway for the red flag, I was leading the race. I'd gotten to the front. Dale Jr. was second and Dale was third. And at that moment, you know, I'm like, all right, I knew this man was the man behind the wheel, but this is like race whisperer stuff. How could he figure this one out?
Right.
And I just thought, it's amazing here in the front now. Now we got to work to stay here. And that's exactly what we did. I shook out in the lead. Dale Jr. was second. And we pretty much had it made. Because we were pushing, he was pushing me, and Dale was pushing Dale Jr., and it was enough of a push to keep Dale out in front, but Dale was in a hornet's nest. There was no one back there, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, were content with staying in line. They all wanted to push forward and draft forward, and Dale just fought them off. He used his unbelievable skills to keep our cars pushed ahead, and Dale Jr., we had to focus on understanding that how the draft worked and not to get too far ahead. And there's a lot of playing with the throttle and looking in the mirror, but we did our part and Dale was busy doing his part, and it all worked way until that last turn.
Yeah. So you win the Daytona 500 after 462 losses, huge win. And so tell us how you felt when you won, and then we'll talk about, then I'll ask you how what happened after that. So you won the race, and how did you feel?
I guess I probably felt maybe more relief than anything. You know, it was the Daytona 500. So, I mean, if you're a kid growing up and want to be a race car driver, it's hard to be bold enough to dream that you could ever win the Daytona 500.
Right, I mean, exactly.
That just doesn't happen to many people. And that's exactly how that was my thought when I was like, I want to race Daytona, win the Daytona 500. And to take the check flag and go to victory and just feel all the adrenaline from my team and my wife and my kids are there. And it was the celebration for me. It was more about being relieved that I finally put a race, and more about me being thankful that I was able to deliver to my team and my family. I was able to get the job done and they could celebrate. To me, it was more about them than it was me. And that's how the celebration began. And there was confetti in the air and hugs all around and champagne. And it was a beautiful scene. My brother was calling the race from the TV booth. It was his first time up in the booth. He had retired the year at the end of the 2000 season. And so getting to talk to him and him understanding exactly how hard winning is and all I'd been through, it was just the perfect scene.
Yes. And your brother crying, you know, and he was so happy for you. It was very touching, extremely touching. So then at what moment did you find out that Dale Earnhardt had not made it, that he had passed away?
On the last lap, I took the checker and of course, jubilation over the radio, and fans are all in the stands cheering, and I'm making my way on the cool down lap back to pit road where I could go to victory lane. And the accident scene was down in turn four. This is when I believe that there are angels and God protects us.
Yes.
And everything happens for a reason.
Yes.
Because I drove right by where Dale's car was crashed, and the other vehicles that were, the other race cars that were in it were setting, and the safety vehicles had pulled up. And I just drove right by that scene. And I know that if I had have seen Dale's car, or if I had a thought about anything, I would have pulled over there. I would have pulled over there, and I would have went straight to that car to get him out and get a hug, you know, have a celebration for this amazing accomplishment. And he died, you know, instantly when he crashed. And I did not go over there. I didn't know. I didn't even see it. It wasn't even a part of my world. And when I got to Victory Lane, we were able to celebrate for a half hour, 30, 40 minutes. And I just kept asking, well, where's Dale? Why isn't Dale here yet? It's like, well, he was involved in that last slap crash. I had to go to the care center. They're checking him out. He'll be here soon, I'm sure. And
so they were lying. They were lying to you. They were not telling you the truth.
No, they weren't lying. I don't really know.
Oh, they don't think they knew. Okay.
I don't think anybody knew.
Okay.
And so, you know, we were certainly began to get more and more concerned. And I was getting confused because it just didn't make sense that he or Dale Jr., neither one had come to Victory Lane. And I began to ask my wife, you know, what's going on? Dale not here. And she said, they're checking on him. I don't know yet, but they're checking on him. And one of the racers that was involved in the turn four crash that took Dale's life was Ken Schrader. And Kenny is a buddy, you know, we're friends, and we've been friends for a long time. And he liked to make me for never winning in a lighthearted way. And, you know, we would always have a good time, joking about life and racing and, you know, what it all really meant. And so, you know, no Dale Jr., no one that I'd raced with had been to Victory Lane. My brother was up in the TV booth. And so I'm starting to think, well, why isn't anybody here? And I see Schrader come through the gate at Victory Lane. And I remember thinking, good, finally, somebody's here that I can talk to about this race.
Mm-hmm.
And Schrader walked up and he had a really solemn, sad look on his face. And, you know, like I said, he liked to joke with me. And he said, he grabbed me. He took both of his hands and grabbed both my arms and pulled me close to him. And he talked into my ear and he said, it's not good. And so when he said it, there's video of me hearing him say that.
Right.
And I pushed away and I looked at him with a weird look, and he didn't say anything. And so I leaned over and I said, Schrader, it really ain't that bad that I won the Daytona 500, is it? I mean, I know it's a big race, but is it really that bad? You know, I was continuing our joking that we had always done. And when I said that, he said, no, it's not good. Dale's not good. And at that moment, I knew that it was something wasn't right. Schrader did not know that, you know, that Dale had passed when he saw him. He just knew that he was in bad shape, and he wanted me to know that. He's my dear friend. He wanted me to know that just so that I could begin to prepare myself for what was to be, what I was going to learn to be reality soon. And so when he left, I just was a little bit, I think I was different then. I just kept telling everybody, I want to see Dale. I wanted that Daytona 500 trophy and everything that came with it. But the thing I wanted most was Dale to walk up to me in Victory Lane. And you know, he's a rough cut, tough guy, but I knew he was going to give me the biggest hug I'd ever had in my life. I'd seen his son, Dale Jr., win at Texas in his rookie season 2000. And Dale went to Victory Lane and hugged him. And I wanted that hug so bad. And I knew 100% for sure what he was going to say. And what he was going to say was, see, I told you you'd win in my car. He'd always told me I'd win if I could drive for him. I told you you'd win in my car. And then he would have said, and that one's on me. You better go get another one now.
Right.
Because I know that he was pushing and helping, and he would have taken the credit that he deserved for it and put pressure on me to go win some more. And I loved all that. That's exactly what I was. That's why I wanted that ride. I wanted to win for Dale. And, you know, obviously the hug never came.
Right. He pushed you forward. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Jan Price Show, all about movies. And my guest today is two-time Daytona 500 champion Michael Waltrip. And we're talking about his new documentary, Blink of an Eye. So the way I have to tell you, I really loved this documentary. It brought me to tears a number of times when I was watching it. But for me, it was a love story. It was a love story between two men. And that's what was so beautiful. The relationship you had with Dale and the relationship that you've continued to have with Dale Jr. Do you feel that Dale is an angel watching over you? Because then you went on to win, 2 years later? Again, do you feel that he had protected you and had watched over you?
I always, felt like that what happened on February 18, 2001 was part of God's plan.
Yes.
Dale was protecting his son and his friend, and it was time for him to go home. And that's a pretty good way to leave this world. If you're seeing something, the last thing you see on earth is exactly what you wanted to see.
Right.
And I just feel like that's how life works. I'm a Christian, and I believe that when I pass, I'm going to go to heaven. And I believe that's exactly what Dale did. And there's a lot of people I like in heaven right now. I mean, my mom and dad, one of my brothers, and Dale. And I mean, the list goes on and on. And so I like to think that they had a bit of a party that afternoon.
I think so. When we heard the news a week or so ago about Dale Jr. being in an airline accident, my heart stopped. And yet he and his entire family walked away from that. I mean, you can't only think that his father was definitely watching over him that day. How did you feel when you heard that news?
Well, it's scary. We travel all the time, constantly on airplanes, and the news kind of broke quickly when we heard of the plane crash and that it ultimately was Dale Jr.'s plane. And just so thankful that it wasn't his turn, and his family and the pilots and his puppy were able to escape and physically were fine. And you just worry about people mentally. What is it going to be like going forward with living with such a near miss? And I know you got to be thankful and believe that it just wasn't your turn to leave the world. But getting on another airplane and going somewhere, those are going to be just horrifying, I think, memories and thoughts that Dale's going to be dealing with. And so I just pray that mentally they're able to get over this and compartmentalize it and be able to go on with their lives.
Right. It was a true miracle. There was no question about it that it was a true miracle. Talking about change, and how did this change you after, Dale's passing? How did it change you internally? And then also, how did it change the way that you drove?
Well, for 15 years and 400 plus races, I had gone to the racetrack. It was exactly where I wanted to be every weekend. I went there and I wanted to race and I wanted to go compete, even though at times, there were Sunday afternoons when they'd start the engines. I knew that it wasn't going to be my day. The car just wasn't up to pace, or I didn't have what it took to put the car in a position to win. But I always wanted to be there. I wanted to run. If I felt like I had a 12th place car, I wanted to run. And I wanted to be the best I could be every day. But when we left Daytona after that 2001 race, I just really didn't want to be at a track. I wasn't committed. I wasn't focused. I just think I stayed in a funk for a few months. And that was hard. That was hard trying to deal with all that. But eventually I got it all together and understood that Dale hired me to do this job, and I wasn't doing him a service that he would be proud of me for. And I began to get it all together and like you said, race back to victory lane a couple, three times for him and just tried not to be, tried to be focused, tried to be the best I could be behind the wheel. And I think there were times after
Michael.
2003, when we won the second Daytona 500, that maybe I was a bit full of myself, and I didn't like that. And I wanted to be humble, and I wanted to be appreciative, and I wanted to be more humble and
Thank
more appreciative.
You. Michael, I am humbled and appreciate the fact that you've been on the show, and unfortunately our time is up. But thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure talking with you. And again, my guest today has been two-time Daytona 500 champion, Michael Waltrip, and we have been talking about his new documentary, Blink of an Eye. Thank you so much.
On Power Talk AM 1460 and FM 101.1, streaming worldwide on iHeartRadio. Jan Price talks to the movers and shakers in the film business. The Jan Price Show.